All right. You ever get that like little bit of anxiety? You know, when you see those red blue lights flashing in your rear view mirror?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking traffic stops today. And more specifically, like, what are your rights when you have that encounter with law enforcement?
Right.
And to unpack all of this, we're diving deep into a landmark Supreme Court case, Berkmer v. McCarty.
Okay.
And this 1984 decision, it really changed how we understand, you know, Miranda rights. You know, the whole you have the right to remain silent, that
Right.
whole spiel, and how those rights actually apply during, you know, something as routine as a traffic stop,
Yeah.
which most people don't. I mean, at least I don't think of Miranda rights when I'm getting pulled over. I think of like, ooh, what did I do? Is my taillight out?
Right. Yeah, you think of much more practical things like how much is this ticket gonna be?
Exactly, yeah.
What's fascinating about Berkmer v. McCarty is that it brings up this question of whether, those same rights that protect you when you're, being questioned for a serious crime
Right.
actually also apply when you're pulled over, for a simple traffic violation.
Yeah.
And this is a question that went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Why?
And at the center of it all was this guy named Richard McCarty.
So who was this Richard McCarty and what got him into this legal hot seat?
Yeah, so back in 1980, McCarty was driving down an Ohio highway,
Right.
and he was pulled over for kind of weaving erratically.
Okay, so we even got it.
Yeah, so things escalated pretty quickly when he failed a field sobriety test, and then he even admitted to the officer that he'd had a couple of beers and smoked some marijuana.
So sounds like a pretty open and shut DUI case.
It does, yeah, textbook, right?
Yeah. But what makes this case so special? I mean, what sends it all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Here's a twist. The officers never read McCarty his Miranda rights.
Oh.
Not at the roadside, not when they took him to the station, not even during further questioning at the jail.
So no Miranda the whole
The
time.
whole time. And it was that missing, those warnings. Yeah.
That really became the center of this legal battle that followed.
Okay, so let's kind of unpack the timeline. So we've got McCarty, he's weaving. He fails the sobriety test. He tells the officer he's been using substances.
Yeah.
Like, what happens next?
Yeah, so he was arrested
Of course.
naturally and taken to the county jail.
Okay.
But even at the jail, when officers continued to question him,
Yeah.
those Miranda warnings were never given.
Okay, wow.
And that's really what set off all the legal fireworks.
Okay, so it's not really about him like driving under the influence at this point.
Right?
It's really about this question of like, did the police violate his right against self-incrimination
Exactly. Yep. You got it.
by not giving him his Miranda rights?
Yep. And so his lawyer argued that any statements that McCarty made,
Yeah.
both at the roadside and then also back at the jail,
Right.
should just be completely thrown out
Okay.
because he was never informed of his right to remain silent.
Got it. So that's kind of where the whole thing starts.
So walk us through like how this case, I imagine it didn't go straight to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, good point.
How did this like work its way through the courts?
So it started, the trial court initially actually denied McCarty's motion to suppress his statements. So they said, nope, we're not throwing those out. And so he was found guilty.
Okay.
And then his appeals through the county court, even the Ohio Supreme Court,
Wow.
also unsuccessful. So it was really looking like a dead end for his argument.
Yeah, totally.
But McCarty was persistent. He filed a petition for something called habeas corpus in federal court.
Okay.
And habeas corpus is basically seeking relief from what he considered an unlawful detention.
Okay.
And so initially that was dismissed too.
Oh, wow.
But then the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals stepped in and reversed the decision,
Okay.
saying that Miranda warnings have to be given to all individuals before any type of custodial interrogation,
Got it.
regardless of the offense.
So that's the escalation point where it goes to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Because now we have this conflict between the Ohio Supreme Court
Right.
and the Sixth Circuit.
Exactly. So the courts were really divided on this issue of whether Miranda applied to, what seemed like just
You got run-of-the-mill traffic
a minor
rules.
traffic
Yeah,
violation.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
And so the Supreme Court had to step in and give a more definitive answer.
Got it.
And so they had these two main questions that they were grappling with.
Okay.
The first one is, does Miranda apply even to these minor offenses,
Okay.
like traffic violations? And maybe even more importantly, is a typical traffic stop even considered custodial interrogation under the law, which would trigger those Miranda protections?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people, when they hear custodial interrogation, they probably don't think traffic stop,
Right.
And I have a feeling that their answer to these questions probably will surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And that's where things get really interesting.
All right, so what did the Supreme Court decide?
Okay, so you remember those two questions we talked about?
Yeah.
The court actually kind of gave a split decision.
Okay.
They said, yes, and this is important, Miranda applies to all offenses, even minor ones. So, like, no exceptions, you get a speeding ticket, broken taillight, it doesn't matter.
So if I get pulled over for a parking violation, the officer has to read me my Miranda rights.
Oh.
That seems like a bit much.
Not quite, and this is where the split part of the decision comes in. The court also said that a routine traffic stop on its own isn't considered custodial interrogation.
Hold on, so Miranda applies to everything, but a traffic stop isn't considered custodial.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little confused. How does that work?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
It all comes down to why the court drew this very specific line between a simple traffic stop and actually being taken into custody.
So help us understand the logic here. Like, why wouldn't a traffic stop just automatically trigger Miranda?
Mm-hmm.
It still seems like an interaction with the police where you could say something to incriminate yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So the court was really kind of walking a tightrope, trying to balance individual rights with, like, the practical needs of law enforcement.
Right.
So they had two main justifications for their decision. First, they wanted to keep the Miranda rule clear and straightforward.
Okay.
They thought, if we start creating all these exceptions for different types of offenses, it's just going to be confusing for everybody, for police officers and for citizens.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Like a bright line rule, you know, Miranda applies across the board no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Simple. Yeah. They didn't want officers or citizens for that matter trying to guess, like, okay, does this situation require Miranda? Does that situation require Miranda based on how serious they think the offense is?
Right.
But, and here's the second justification, the court compared a routine traffic stop to something called a Terry stop.
Okay, Terry stop. Now, I've heard that term before, but can you remind us what that is and how it connects to this, to the traffic stop?
Yeah, sure. So imagine this. You're walking down the street late at night.
Okay.
And a police officer stops you because you kind of match the description of somebody they're looking for.
Right.
They can ask you some questions, maybe pat you down for weapons, but they can't just arrest you without probable cause.
Right.
That's a Terry stop. It's this brief detention for investigation.
Okay. So it's like a brief, like an investigative detention, but not a full-blown arrest.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the court saw some similarities between that kind of Terry stop and a routine traffic stop.
Okay.
You know, they're both usually brief. They happen out in public. And like the questioning should be limited to the reason why you were stopped.
Okay. So unlike being interrogated at the police station, you're not like surrounded by officers. It's like, you know, the questions are more about like, hey, why did I pull you over, and not like some other fishing expedition for other offenses.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where the court's focus on the reasonable person standard comes in. They said a reasonable person, after being pulled over, would understand that they're free to go once the officer has like written the ticket or given them a warning.
Okay, so that makes sense. But here's what's kind of tripping me up a little bit.
Okay.
If McCarty was formally arrested, like, later on at the jail,
yeah,
shouldn't he have been Mirandized at that point? Because, you know, didn't the court say Miranda applies to all offenses?
You're exactly right. And that's a really sharp observation. The distinction between the initial roadside stop and what happened back at the jail is super critical in this case.
Yeah.
So can you explain, like, why wasn't he Mirandized when they got to the station?
Yeah.
So remember, the Supreme Court's ruling was very specific. They said a routine traffic stop in and of itself is not automatically custodial. But the moment McCarty was formally placed under arrest, everything changed.
Got it.
At that point, he was in custody, and Miranda absolutely should have been triggered.
Okay, so they're drawing like a really kind of bright line.
Yeah.
Between like those initial roadside interactions, where you're not technically in custody.
Right.
But then the minute you are arrested, then it's a whole different ballgame.
Exactly. Yep. And that's a distinction that I think it's really important for people to understand, because what you say on the side of the road, even if you haven't been Mirandized, might still be admissible in court.
Right.
But after a formal arrest,
yeah,
anything you say without being Mirandized, it's generally going to be inadmissible.
Okay.
So that right to remain silent really becomes your most powerful tool.
It does. So it's like, so Berkmer v. McCarty is almost like a roadmap to like understanding your rights during a traffic stop.
Right.
It's like it's telling you, you know, when Miranda is absolutely required.
Right, right.
And when it might not be.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it really goes to show how even these like seemingly small details of an encounter with law enforcement can have huge legal consequences.
Yeah.
They do. You know, whether an officer is just like briefly detaining you, like in a Terry stop,
right,
versus formally arresting you.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference. Your rights and your protections change.
Oh, they do. They do. But wait, there's like another layer to this case, right?
Yeah.
We've got one of the justices, Justice Stevens. He kind of had a different opinion, even though he agreed with the outcome of the case.
Yeah, that's right. So Justice Stevens wrote what's called a partial concurrence.
Okay.
Which means he agreed with the final decision.
Okay.
But he had a different way of looking at how the majority got there.
Okay, now this is where I love getting into like the legal nuances.
Right.
What was Justice Stevens's problem with like with the majority opinion?
He felt like the majority went a little bit too far in their discussion of pre-arrest statements.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially since McCarty's case really hinged on what happened after he was already in custody, you know, back at the jail.
Right.
Stevens thought the court should have just focused their ruling on that lack of Miranda warnings at the jail.
Got it.
And not made like broader statements about questioning that happens during a roadside stop.
So it's almost like he thought they overstepped a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like making pronouncements about things that weren't like strictly necessary.
Right.
To decide the case.
Exactly. And Stevens' concurrence is actually a great example of something called judicial restraint.
Okay.
It's this idea that courts should avoid making these big, sweeping legal pronouncements that go beyond the specific case in front of them.
Okay, got it.
He really believed in this idea of like a more narrow approach.
Right.
You know, rule on what's absolutely necessary to resolve the dispute and then... That's it.
Don't try to like write the law for every possible scenario down the road.
Exactly. Yeah. And judicial restraint is actually this constant tension that we see in a lot of legal decisions.
Right.
It's this balance between, okay, we need to provide some clear guidance.
Yeah.
But we also need to recognize that every case has its own unique facts and circumstances.
Right, right.
So we don't want to like overstep.
Yeah.
It really makes you think about how this debate between like, you know, a broad ruling versus a narrow ruling plays out in so many legal cases.
It does, yeah.
It really reflects a bigger conversation about, like, what is the role of courts
right.
in shaping the law?
Yeah.
Are they simply there to interpret existing laws?
Right.
Or do they have a more active role
right.
in actually creating legal principles through their decisions?
Wow, now we're getting into legal philosophy.
I know, right.
But, I mean, it shows why Justice Stevens' concurrence is important.
Yeah.
It's not just about the specifics of Berkmer v. McCarty.
Right.
It's about, like, how judges approach their role in the legal system as a whole.
Exactly, yeah. It's a debate that continues to this day.
Right.
Every Supreme Court case, in a way, it kind of adds to this ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
About legal interpretation.
Right.
And the role of the judiciary in a democracy.
Right. So we've talked about, like, judicial restraint.
Yeah.
But there's another, like, important legal concept that we see at play in Berkmer v. McCarty.
Yeah.
And that's this idea of the reasonable person standard.
Yeah.
So what does that actually mean in this context?
Right. So remember how the court decided that routine traffic stops aren't custodial?
Yeah.
They based that on the idea that a reasonable person would feel free to leave.
Okay.
Once the officer's done questioning them and issuing a ticket or warning.
Okay.
So it's not about like, what did the officer think or what did the officer intend? It's really about how would an average person perceive the situation?
Yeah.
And this reasonable person standard is super important because it moves us away from subjective interpretations.
Right.
You know, it helps ensure that the law is applied consistently.
Right.
It doesn't matter which officer you encounter. It doesn't matter the specific details of the stop.
Got it.
And it creates a more predictable, a more fair legal framework.
So this legal yardstick.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I like
it. But determining like, was somebody really in custody during their interaction with the police?
Exactly, yeah. It's this benchmark
of
deciding, you know, were their Fifth Amendment rights actually triggered?
Right.
And should they have been given those Miranda warnings?
Okay, so this reasonable person standard, like, it pops up in all sorts of legal cases.
So absolutely.
Not just Miranda.
Not just Miranda, no. It's a very fundamental legal concept.
Okay.
Especially in areas like tort law and criminal law.
Okay.
It's a way for us to establish this common standard
oh, yeah.
of like, what does society consider acceptable behavior?
Got it.
Or reasonable behavior.
So like legal shorthand for how would a typical person
right.
act or think
yeah.
in a suit and situation?
Exactly. And it's incredibly powerful, really, for making sure that the law is fair and that it's applied consistently.
Yeah, it is. Wow, we've covered a lot of ground. I mean, we've talked about like, you know, why the court decided the way they did, like the bigger implications of this case. We've even gotten into some, like, I would say pretty heady legal concepts.
Yeah.
You know, like judicial restraint and the reasonable person standard.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's clear that Berkmer v. McCarty is a lot more than just a simple DUI case.
It really is, yeah. And I think it highlights how even something as like seemingly simple as a traffic stop
mm-hmm.
can raise these complex legal questions that really get at the heart of our individual rights.
Right.
And this balance of power between citizens and law enforcement.
Right. This has been incredibly insightful.
Yeah, it's been fun.
But I think it's time that we kind of shift gears a little bit
mm-hmm.
and talk about what this all means for our listeners. You know, how can understanding this case help them in their own interactions with the police?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we've spent, you know, this whole episode really kind of breaking down Berkmer v. McCarty, looking at, you know, what the Supreme Court decided. And we've even gotten into some, I think, pretty in-depth legal concepts.
Right.
But let's, like, bring it all home. You know, what does this mean for you listening right now? Like, how can understanding this case actually help you in real life if you ever find yourself, you know, talking to a police officer?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want this to be just some sort of, like, academic exercise.
Yeah.
The goal is to give you some knowledge that you can actually use.
Right.
So let's try to distill Berkmer v. McCarty down to, like, you know, its most practical takeaways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, never forget that Miranda applies to all offenses, even minor ones, once you're formally under arrest.
So the handcuffs click, you hear you have the right to remain silent. That's when the game changes. Like, don't fall into this trap of thinking, oh, well, it's just a broken taillight. They can't use, like, anything I say against me.
Right. Yeah. Once you're in custody, those Fifth Amendment protections are super important.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings us to, like, the second key takeaway, right?
Right.
Which is, even though, you know, a routine traffic stop isn't necessarily considered custodial interrogation.
Right.
You still need to be, like, really mindful of what you say to the police, even during those, like, you know, early interactions.
Absolutely, yeah. Those seemingly casual chats that you have on the side of the road, they can have real legal consequences.
Right.
You know, always be polite, be respectful, but remember that you do have that right to remain silent.
Yeah. Don't feel pressured to answer questions that could potentially, you know, incriminate you. Even if the officer seems really friendly or they're trying to, you know, kind of downplay the seriousness of the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're ever, like, unsure about your rights or, like, how to proceed, you can always just, you know, politely but firmly say, hey, I want to talk to an attorney.
Right. That's your right. And it's one that you should never hesitate to invoke.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Berkmer v. McCarty, it's not just, like, some dusty old legal case from, you know, decades ago.
No.
I mean, it established these principles that are still very much alive and can really impact your life, especially during these, like, everyday interactions with law enforcement.
It really shows, I think, how important it is to be informed.
Yeah.
And to know your rights. The law can seem really complex, intimidating.
It can.
But, like, understanding these key cases, you know, like Berkmer v. McCarty, it can really empower you to navigate those situations with more confidence.
Yeah, it can. You know, it's interesting to think about how much, like, technology has changed since 1984 when this case happened.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have smartphones now. We have body cameras, dash cams. It makes me wonder, like, how those advancements have maybe impacted Miranda rights or traffic stops in general.
That's such a good point. I mean, it's a whole other, like, can of worms almost, you know? What? The intersection of law and technology, it's constantly evolving.
It is.
And it raises all these new questions about how we even approach those interactions between citizens and law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, in this modern world, that's a whole other deep dive, maybe.
Yeah, that's a great idea for a future episode, for
yeah.
sure. But I think, you know, for now, we've reached the end of our little journey through the twists and turns of Berkmer v. McCarty. And I really hope that this deep dive has been enlightening.
Me too.
And more importantly, I hope that it's given you some, like, really practical knowledge that you can actually carry with you.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, next time you see those red and blue lights flashing behind you, just remember that it's not just a signal to stop your car.
Right.
It's also a reminder that your rights are at play.
Exactly.
And, you know, the legal principles that we've talked about today, they matter. And as always, we love hearing from you. So please share your thoughts or any questions you have, or even like your own experiences with traffic stops and Miranda rights.
Yeah, let's keep this conversation going.
Exactly. Until next time, stay informed, stay curious, and most importantly, stay empowered.